From Daylight and Media 3 Limited, I'm Kazuki Akiba.
I'm Tara Hori.
And this is a new season of Sayonara Baseball. This is a podcast where you and I find unseen baseball gems by analyzing them alongside different trends, news, and motivation behind many moves around the league today. Today, we will discuss the preview to the 2020 League Division Series and what's the key to winning those series. And here to talk more about this is Brandon Weiser, a longtime colleague of mine. He's a business intelligence professional who's a Forbes advisor contributor, as well as the man behind the Airline Guy blog. He writes his opinions on news in the airline industry.
Having a little trouble locating so far tonight. Full count pitch to Urshela. A swing and a drive to left field. Gio Urshela's hit a grand slam!
Welcome back to Sayonara Baseball. I'm Kazuki, and with me today is a special guest of mine, a longtime friend, softball teammate, Forbes Softball Rookie of the Year, three seasons before me, winning the award, obviously, the airline guy, Brandon Weiser. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you very much, Kazuki. Pleasure to be here.
And we're here to talk about like the key changes in this postseason in baseball, as well as what happened in the wildcard series and what we're expecting to happen in this upcoming League Division Series. So, what's your first like impression of the changes that went through this season, besides the whole pandemic changing the world?
I would say the thing that I've noticed the most, when we're going to see going forward with the rest of the Major League Baseball playoffs, is every team has played each other, and that shouldn't have happened in theory, because the way the season was set up, it was only divisional opponents. Yet now every series going forward, at least in the division series, is a divisional series. AL East is playing AL East, AL West is playing AL West, NL East playing NL East, NL West playing NL West, which is a very interesting occurrence. So no one's unfamiliar with their opponent. They've played them at least 5-6 times, easily, maybe even more.
Right. Especially if it comes to what, Oakland and Houston. They've probably seen each other 6 times already.
Oh gosh, we're going to have a lot to talk about with Oakland, Houston.
we do. But one thing I want to really talk about is what changed in this year's format? Like, what's so different compared to last year? Because like, we've been changing this whole wildcard series format so much in the past 5 years that this one's a completely new thing.
Right. Another thing that's different, obviously, is that every team played a game before they got to this round. Sometimes that never happened. Like, the number one seed would have never played a series pre the division series. Like, Tampa Bay had to play the Blue Jays, beat the Blue Jays. They beat them in 2 games out of 3. But now they have to then travel across the country to San Diego and set themselves up. New York had to play 2 long games with Cleveland. They would have had to play 2 games. But they usually would have 2 games, and then there would be like no break. Now you have a break. So the schedule is different. The fact that you have to play a person beforehand, the times of the games were insane. I mean, you had games starting at 12. There were 8 games on one day. It went from 12 to 1:30 a.m.
Right. And I think most of them were on ESPN, exception of one going to ABC. Like, it was nuts.
It was. I mean, there were stats about Matt Vasgersian and Buster Olney and Alex Rodriguez with Sunday Night Baseball crew on ESPN called the first game of the day, the Reds-Braves game. And then they called the game with the Indians and the Yankees. And they started at noon and they ended at 1:30 because of the double rain delay. Like, Vasgersian called almost like 750 pitches. I mean, that's insane. In a 12-hour period, a man called almost between 500 and 750 pitches of a game. I mean, I give them a lot of credit. That was an incredible amount of focus. That game, the second game, was insane. The other one, and the Reds-Braves game was like what we're Brad, kind of boring.
Well, yeah, to be frank, we'll get into it in the recap, but the Reds, like, you know, they were clear chokers again. So
we'll get into my hot takes about all the games that went away they were. But it was just interesting to watch all these games be so fast and furious and then slow down.
And I think the crazy part is they were expecting like the NBA, like, you know, playoff bracket or the March Madness where you have 16 teams, you know, facing off each other. And then next thing you know, it's a totally different environment in baseball. And it seems like it works and not really at the same time.
Right. I mean, the bracket was a cool idea. I think it provided a lot of thrill when there felt like there wasn't a whole lot of thrill to be had. And now we got kind of what we all expected a little bit.
Right. I mean, there's some shockers, to be fair.
Well, the teams, yes. But the format left is like, okay, we've done this before. Let's do it again.
and then see, are we going to expect a different result? Probably not.
Probably not. Well, again, we'll talk about the teams that are involved here, which is some of them are surprises and some are not. And also the other thing, obviously, with the playoffs this year, which has been very openly discussed, is the fact that these games are in single stadiums. There is no intermittent travel between stadiums. Like, even your games are not, and the AL are not from San Diego to Los Angeles, not bounced between teams. Every game is in San Diego for one series. Every game is in LA. Every game is in Houston. Every game is in Arlington, which is another unique experience. I mean, you had series, obviously, that was like you played Oakland and they had to go to New York. I mean, you had to go play Oakland, wait a day, and then fly to New York, play in New York a game, and then fly back. You don't have that this year, which is obviously for safety and smart reasons. But that changes everything. There is no reason. There is no rest. I mean, we'll talk. I have thoughts about that based on watching the WNBA, the NBA, MLS, and the NHL about how that impacted the playoffs. I'm not sure what it's going to be like in baseball, though.
Considering that it's not really the one individual carries everything, they can, but it's a team sport at the end. So if all nine players don't contribute in that environment, then, you know, you're not going to win any games. But you're right that it's kind of crazy that I think they've copied the NBA's model for the bubble, you know, to have it in one stadium. But the fact that they're playing in different league stadium is kind of nuts where, you know, American League goes to National League ballpark and National League goes to American League ballpark. Like, that's a completely different experience. And out of all of them, only one is a hitter's ballpark.
Right. Another thing that we'll be talking about in the future is the stadiums they chose, for the right reasons, are great stadiums. Warm weather stadiums. Weather is generally pretty good in the California stadiums. And then the two stadiums in Texas are both dome stadiums. They have retractable roofs. But the format of those ballparks compared to where these teams normally play, night and day, very different, interesting elements that will add to the success or failure of these teams. So we'll see how that all plays out.
Before we get started, I was wondering, what's your most fondest memories of like a playoff game? Like, what is your favorite series that you've seen in your lifetime?
That's a good question. Obviously, baseball has in terms of playoffs, I have to go back many years. I go back 25 years to the year 1995 division series, Seattle Mariners against the New York Yankees. Game five, the Yankees were up 2-0. The Mariners won two games in these insane fashions. Edgar Martinez had a grand slam to win the game in game four. And then they come home, they play in the Kingdome, the worst, best stadium in America at the time. And the game that literally saved baseball in Seattle. I mean, I've watched that game twice during the last 3 months. I listened to it on the radio once just to go through all the elements of that game. And the fondest memory is that final inning where the Mariners got a score. They got a win to score. And Joey Cora at the top of the inning somehow bunt singles and swipes first. And as you know, I have a habit of accidentally diving at first base. And he somehow swings his hands around the most absurd way to get on first base. And then that starts it. Griffey's up. Griffey gets on. And then Edgar Martinez with my favorite baseball play of all time.
Here's the division championship. No one is winning. No one is winning.
just incredible. I listened to the call all the way around.
I remember like watching a lot of like recaps, like on, you know, like Baseball Classics channel quite a bit. And the funny part was A-Rod was still on deck. If like, you know,
that's one of the greatest elements of that game is A-Rod was on deck. The Mariners subbed out their starting catcher for a third baseman who took a walk, who then set up the play to tie the game. The pitcher in the game was a Cy Young winner who lost the game, Jack McDowell. I mean, the elements of that game are insane. I mean, just the players, where they were and where they are now. I mean, you had Paul O'Neill, who was just having a ball game in that game. You had all these players. I mean, Randy Johnson had to come in from the bullpen. We all know good pitchers. We've seen them. But Randy Johnson coming in the bullpen, 6'10", left-hander, and just throwing heat at these. And they got nothing off. I mean, it was, oh boy.
I mean, he was filthy. That's prime Randy.
Right. I was prime Randy Johnson. And then we all know the Mariners were stacked with good players then. So were the Yankees. But again, one of the best signing off points of that game was in the batter's box, rookie shortstop Alex Rodriguez.
Right. That whole history that he was playing playoff games since he was 18.
That was incredible. I mean, and that was just an insane moment. I mean, the Mariners currently now have the longest playoff drought. They have not played since 2001 when they won their 116 games. But for me, it's still the best memory.
2-2 pitch. This one ripped to left field and gone in a hurry. Tatis delivers the electricity with a 3-run shot. No crowd, but the DJ's spinning, the lights are flashing, and the Padres are back in this game thanks to Fernando Tatis Jr.
I wanted to dive straight into this playoff format, so let's start off with the recap of the wildcard series. What went right and what went wrong? Let's start off with a series. I mean, do you want to start off with the most boring series? The Blue Jays, Rays. That's probably the most boring series.
Jays, Rays. Very, very straightforward. Let's go to Tampa Bay. Let's go to the Trop. Play the goal sound. Play the goal horn every time the home run leaves the ballpark. Oh, that series was just Hunter Renfroe grand slam game. Get series over.
And then bring in Nick Anderson in the eighth or ninth. Game over.
Game over. Just simple nature. I do feel for the Blue Jays, a lot of promise on that team. We all know they're young stars. Bo Bichette was injured this part of the season, so that was another thing. But that team, the Rays, I mean, we can go back several seasons ago when the Rays decided to trade Chris Archer, which was a bold, bold move at that time.
A steal of the century, to be fair.
Austin Meadows and Glasnow came in that trade from the Pirates, I remember it.
Right? Yes.
Glasnow was the number two starter.
Right.
Glasnow was a very good pitcher for the Pirates, but he was not a number two starter. He's a number two starter.
Right.
Kudos to that organization for believing in them. I mean, they pioneered a lot of different things in Tampa Bay with terms of their pitching staff. But that was genius to watch that team unfold and just small little trades that had serious long impacts. We'll see what happens. Obviously, their roster is obviously changing too. We'll see who plays.
Every year it is changing all the time. I mean, we still don't know what kind of moves they make, but they somehow make it work. Like they trade off Pham for Renfroe, Margot, and then they even gave up Cronenworth, you know, to get all of them. And then they went to the Cardinals to pick up a Rosarena. Next thing you know, they have more offensive, depth.
Right. Can you imagine huge foreshadowing if Tampa, San Diego in the World Series? It's like, we recognize half of you guys. We recognize half of you guys.
Huh. It's like, huh, what a coincidence.
What a coincidence. We all know each other. I mean, that is just, but like I said, kudos to both to the Rays for just how they piece together that lineup. Because if you look across their hitters, there's not a lot of truly big star power type player on the active roster right now.
Right. They're just good. They're good, but not great.
Put them all together. Really solid team. consistent. They played very well against a lot of teams this year, and we'll see what happens. Again, sorry the Blue Jays aren't there. We'd love to see Vlad Guerrero Jr. just start hitting homers in San Diego. Didn't happen.
I mean, it's a learning experience for the Blue Jays. I mean, they have a bright future to look forward to in the American League East. Like, they're going to, I think if they could get more pitching, like, besides Ryu, like, they will go deep. They have the pieces.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a big step up for them. So we'll see what happens. I'm looking down the roster of the Rays, and it's impressive what they've been able to pull off with
this. Brandon Lau, Joey Wendell, and then Willy Adames, you know, stepping up.
Right. And then we always have to mention the speedy demon that is Kevin Kiermaier.
Right.
When he is on, fear. I remember listening to games with the Rays for years and just being like, oh, he's on base? Oh, darn it. Because he could do anything. He can make a pitcher change all their mechanics just because of how he plays the runs of base pass.
Right.
Now they have multiple players that can do that, from hitting and getting moving people up. And just that is a good, solid lineup. And then we cannot avoid the pitchers. Wow, wow, wow. Your top three starters, Tyler Glasnow, Blake Snell, Charlie Morton. I have a lot of confidence in those three guys.
As long as Morton's back healthy, I think that's the big asterisk right now, is Morton's health has been this whole year. But otherwise, I think the big strength they have is their bullpen arms. They could pitch very deep if they have to. Like, you could bring in a bulk guy like Yarbrough, and like, he could handle it. And then you got Diego Castillo, Fairbanks. Like, you could throw anyone, Sheriff, if you want to, and they could close the game.
I mean, it's interesting because, in my opinion, this team truly pioneered the idea of the setup, the opener kind of mentality. And it was Ryan Yarbrough that could do that. Ryan Yarbrough was the guy who could sit in the middle of the game and just pitch.
Right.
And now, with a shortened season, all these elements, that experience could prove very vital.
And the way Kevin Cash handles that bullpen is very smart, too. It's very much logical and matchup focused. So he has a reason on why he's throwing those guys in those situations, which is why Nick Anderson, who should be a closer, is not completely a closer, because he's just a fireman. He just comes in a very tight game. It was a very tight matchup, like, to face the 2-3-4 guys of any opposing team.
So we'll very much see what's going to happen with this team. It's an interesting series to recap.
Right. Next one. Should we still stick to the American League? There's like a lot of script in the American League, but we could go with, okay, let's go with Minnesota, Houston. What a boring series.
The only element of that series that was entertaining was the comments of Correa after the game. It was like
you guys doubted us. Like, I'm like, all right, shut the like heck up, you know, like, we don't need to hear you.
Right. So I think that series was, again, the Twins. Oof. I mean, they were good. They have a lot of good pieces, and they got nowhere.
Right. No Bumba squad. No. And I think this is where we come in with the bullpen mismanagement from Baldelli. I think they played by numbers too heavily this time, because like, they took out Maeda too quickly. I think Maeda could have pitched another inning, and that would have been a tight 1-0 game.
Right. I mean, that the Minnesota Twins, I'm looking at, like, their OPS in that series was below 400. Oh, boy.
And that OPS comes from one guy, which is Grandpa Cruz. Grandpa Nelson Cruz.
Grandpa Nelson Cruz. They had how many runs? They had two runs. Oh, it was a tough series to watch. I mean, I think they have like a pretty sad streak of not winning playoff games. Like, they've missed
18 now. 18. Since 2004, 18 straight losses.
So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. And now Cruz is open to, I believe he's almost a free agent.
He is a free agent, I think.
He's a free agent. So like, what's going to happen? But
That was ugly. That curse wasn't broken, but there was one curse that got lifted, which was Dusty Baker's losing streak for a do or die or any like elimination game matchup. His curse got lifted for the first time since forever.
Right. And that, and the Houston Astros throughout the season, regardless of what people say about all the influence of what's going on, I mean, they, the fact of the matter is they have all of all their historically good players. They're not playing historically good this year. So the fact that they muscled it way out somehow is deserves a little bit of praise, but
well, it's because of Kyle Tucker and Michael Brantley, to be fair.
Right.
And then maybe George Springer towards the last 2 weeks where he, I mean, if you look at all the batting average in general, Altuve dropped 80 points compared to last season to this season,
right.
Hitting 217. Gurriel dropped 60 points. Correa dropped 40 points. Bregman dropped 50 points. Like that whole batting average kind of looks bad now after the whole cheating scandal like got revealed.
Oh yeah. So if you look at, like you said, Carlos Correa played Carlos Correa, Michael Brantley, Kyle Tucker. They are your successful players in this round. George Springer did not perform as well. It's straight and obvious. But during the season, oh boy. Like Bregman down here. Correa down here. Altuve way down here. I mean, like they were rough. I mean, it was rough to watch them this year.
And then I think the hard part was all their pitching went to the infirmary, like Ozuna, Verlander, gone for the year. They had to like throw a bunch of like AAA guys into their starting rotation and bullpen to like make it happen. Because you didn't even have your Urquidy till the last like 3 weeks of the season.
I mean, but you have to remember, they have the infinite playoff menace of Zach Greinke. Like that is the playoff menace. He's played on so many different teams that have gone through the playoffs.
Right. Well, Greinke's only the likable player, probably from the Astros, to be fair.
Right. I mean, so we'll see what happens.
And even he didn't do that well. Like, I think you got to give credit. If I were to give credit to the Astros player, it would be Valdez. That, like, starting rotation deserves credit. Like, they went deep and handled it very well in tough situations.
Right. I mean, he pitched 5 innings in the wild card series. So, yeah. So we'll see what happens. But again, not a great series for either team, really.
I mean, especially we wanted the Twins to beat the Astros.
No one wanted the Astros anywhere near the playoffs this year at all. So yeah, I think that's the God's honest truth.
Right. And then it kind of showed the chokers and the Twins still continuing.
Tough
series. All right, next one. This series is also filled with bullpen mismanagement. It's the White Sox and the A's.
Oh, boy. White Sox and the A's. Well, the A's broke a curse of their own. They had, I think, dating back more than 30 years, had not won a series-clinching game, and then they finally broke the curse, and they beat them out. Game one, Lucas Giolito showed what we all see this year.
He was perfect till the seventh.
I mean, kudos to that. And we all know the White Sox, like the Blue Jays, are loaded with youth. Just loaded. I mean, and then they have some veteran players, too, that have kind of hung around over the years with that team, particularly Tim Anderson.
And then Jose Abreu. That's their MVP.
Right. And then you put them in Oakland, not a good hitter's ballpark. And the pitching showed off in game one, and then game two and three, Oakland just showed what they've been doing for years. Ran a bunch of guys, put them on the field together. They coalesce so well. Pitching is solid. Win a game.
And I think, but we do need to know about game three, though. Like, that whole mismanagement from Rick Renteria wrecked that season. Like, you put your starter Dunning for only 2/3 of the inning, and he bring in Crochet. Like, he was, I get the whole fact about a elimination game of throwing out the kitchen sink, but that was beyond like crazy. And then at the end, you bring in Rodon, who's been horrible for the past few years, in a very crucial fourth inning to give up 4 runs. And that kind of blew the season.
It was just not good. I mean, just it was slightly better word. It was not good. Crochet is an interesting pitcher, though.
He is.
Young guy. Did not expect him to make the majors this year. Comes out and starts throwing heat as soon as he gets to the majors. And we all know that the White Sox were missing a darling of a prospect in Michael Kopech this year, who was sitting out for several reasons. We hope he's healthy coming forward. But to have that, to have Crochet be like, we need you to pitch the game and hold us over, and then we'll do it for two-thirds of an inning. Like, in that game, they pitched 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different pitchers, the longest being 2 innings, Marshall, and he gave up 2 hits, 2 runs, 1 earned, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts. They walked 9 batters in that game.
Yikes.
That is not a good stat line.
And we've got to mention about Crochet, though. He was drafted this season, this year's draft.
That
and
never
he's in
happened.
A play. Right. And he's in a playoff game now.
Right. That was a bold, bold move by the organization. Granted, they were kind of low on the roster spots this year, but they really pushed a lot for that. That team acquired, and from the hitting perspective, several good players in the offseason. Smitty Grandal, Nomar Mazara. We got a shot. I mean, you and I have talked previous to doing this podcast. We thought they could make the World Series.
They could have gone deep.
And that did not happen.
Yep, because of a lot of mismanagement and inexperience in the playoffs. Like, not all of them played in the playoffs, so.
And then you go to the other side of the coin, and you got the Oakland Athletics. Again, consistently good players that played well. When they needed to play well, they played well.
Except they don't have Chapman this year. That's the only unfortunate part. And
got injured during the year. I mean, much as we give a little bit of grief to the White Sox, the Oakland Athletics pitched 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pitchers in that game. They did a very, they had they pitched 8 pitchers. They had 5 pitchers who came away with holds in that game. Jake Diekman, Soria, Hendricks. Wow.
Their bullpen is their biggest strength coming in. And I think in the past episode of the podcast, I said they wouldn't make it because of their starting pitching. They do not have the true number one guy throwing in. Maybe Chris Bassett's that guy. But then after that, you have a lot of down air from Manaea, Mike Minor, and then Luzardo is still a rookie. So he's still finding his footing.
And then the most interesting pitcher on that team, which will come about later on, Mr. Mike Fiers. What will happen with Mike Fiers?
According to Astros, the snitch.
The snitch, right. Well, Mike Fiers, well, there is some degree of ill will, politely, between the two teams in the next round. But like you said, the White Sox burn themselves in this game. And that's unfortunate because they have so much talent. They could have easily have made this work so well for them. And they didn't. They frankly dug their own grave and fell into it in this series.
Now for the last American League playoff wildcard series. This was the most interesting one. And it is my Yankees and the Cleveland Indians.
Oh, yes. The double rain delay game. Why do the Indians always have to go into big games and have like some giant rain delay like impact the series?
The baseball gods.
First of all, game one, Shane. Oh no, Bieber. I mean, the second batter, Aaron Judge hit that home run. We're like, oh no, here we go again.
Here it comes. The Bronx Bombers back. And
like, we did not predict this. Like, hold on. Final score 12-3 in that game.
It was a Cy Young likely winner, Shane Bieber, pitching.
So you had 2 Cy Young contenders in that going off against each other, which is probably the only series that could really have that right off the hop, which was Shane Bieber versus Gerrit Cole. And then there's Gerrit Cole's provides some interesting dynamics this year of itself. But wow. The Yankees led that game and then just plowed through. Plowed through. Whole way through. Granted, shining star of both games, Naylor. Came over from the trade from the Padres or Mike Clevenger. Went great. Went 4-for-4 in game one.
Right. He hit really well. He and Jose Ramirez were the only guys hitting against Gerrit Cole.
Yeah. And now we didn't have to show for it. The second game was just, it went up, it went down, it went way back up
and down.
And then down. And then he finished. I mean, it was just drama for that team. I will say, though, I am very curious with the Yankees and how they manage the whole Gary Sanchez dynamic of where you place him in the lineup. So if you want to play him and Gerrit Cole is going to have a different catcher, where are you going to play him?
I think that's like always been a discussion for everyone is the true wild card of this whole like, you know, playoff is the Yankees. They are the wild card. Like, you don't know what to expect from them. Are you going to get the red hot Yankees you saw in the past two games of the wild card? Or are you going to get that cold Yankees who can't hit anything? Like, we don't know which one to expect.
Cold Yankees this year showed up a very good amount of times against the Tampa Bay Rays.
Right.
Oh, boy.
But that's when also they didn't have all of their players healthy either. So that's the other part that we don't even know yet. Like, what if Aaron Judge, Stanton are in that lineup? Like, how would that change the whole Tampa Bay dynamic? Would that instill fear in the Tampa Bay pitching? Like, besides Nick Anderson, like, what's going to really happen is the question. But to recap game two of that crazy playoff, it just shows the Wahoo like curse is still there for the Tribes. Lindor, who can't for godforsaken way, cannot hit in key clutch situations ever this whole season. And especially in this playoff game, 0-for-5, like he just can't hit anything. And then what's funny about that Wahoo curse is Gio Urshela, the guy who played for the Indians in the 2017 ALDS game five, hits a grand slam, stabbing their brothers in the back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was a revenge home run of anything you've ever seen, a revenge home run. But, I mean, game two is just like the box score looks like just blood splattered everywhere. Because it's just hits, misses, strikeouts, tons of walks, rain delay. Just the amount of just scratches and players that had to figure this out. So we'll see what happens. Again, what will happen in Cleveland between now and the beginning of next year was said a lot through what these past two games. Because Lindor is almost out the door.
Right. And he's looking for big money. Big money.
Jose Ramirez played quite well. It's going to happen. They have this new talent in Naylor. What's going to happen with him? It's just this team has got a lot of questions, and they also traded away Mike Clevenger.
But that's their strength, though. They essentially replaced Clevenger with Jack Plesac.
Right. And they put out two of their top pitchers, and it just didn't work out. Shane Bieber had one of his worst days in a long while. Carrasco pitched okay, gave up some runs.
And then you bring in your wild thing, James Karinchak, the guy, bona fide reliever of the year, right? Who then has not given up a single home run, only one home run this whole season, gives up a grand slam the first batter he faces.
Right. And we're done. Game over.
But then they fight back and forth, like, because the pitching's been choking. But we got to talk about the key of the ninth inning when the Yankees were down by one against their closer, Brad Hand. Oh man, how many mess-ups happen after a couple singles, that ground ball from Gleyber Torres. If that was handled properly, it would have been game over. But the Wahoo curse still existed.
Yeah. And now and then we go back to, like I said, we know who's in the AL. We got a divisional matchup. Astros A's playing in Los Angeles, Rays, Yankees playing San Diego.
Oh man, what a, you know, it's the same thing from the season, but right. we want to explore more into once we get into the divisional matchup. Let's finish the last four series coming from the National League side. Where should we go? Should we start from the East?
We'll go from East to West on this one. Cause I think it gets more and more interesting as you progress across the country.
All right, let's go for it. In Atlanta, Truist Park.
Oh
God, we have the Braves and the Reds. What an upset. Cause I had the Reds going forward from this series because of their pitching. Right. And it was true. Their pitching did show up,
but their batting did not.
Yeah. And apparently that still occurs for 20 straight innings. There were no runs scored by the Reds whatsoever.
They went through an extra inning game and a next game, the full game, no runs. None. Which is, I'm not sure. The Reds didn't produce. The Braves, obviously, their pitching has, we've always had some questions about them in the past a little bit just because of, they've always kind of interchanged.
And injuries this time hurt them big time.
Max Fried has been a star. And then, like you said, you can't win a playoff game. You can't score runs.
Right.
And that's what burned them.
And in their season average, the Reds season average for batting average for this year was 214. They had way more walks than singles. That's very unheard of from a team.
Right. I mean, they basically saw a nightmare in front of them. It's like, if one part of a team does well, the other does not, this is what happens. And it showed very, very well, like almost too well, like what's going to happen. Trevor Bauer struck out 12 batters in that first game. I did not realize.
7 2/3 innings too.
Right. That was Max Fried pitched 7 innings, struck out 5, and gave up 6 hits.
And they could not score a single run during that time. And what's crazy about the whole Red Series is they shut down that Braves offense that scored a ton of runs. They were leading in the NL for runs and RBIs, and they shut them down.
In the extra inning game, the Braves struck out 21 times. The Reds struck out 16 times. That is a pitching testament in a extra inning game. That is something that if whoever looking forward, you got the right people. It's just, you got a lack of balance on the Reds right now. I mean, during the season, they obviously played quite well, but.
And now you're losing your bona fide ace to free agency, which is Trevor Bauer.
What's going to happen? He basically bounced across the state. What's going to happen now?
He's going to get paid big this season, this off season.
Right. And so we'll see how that goes. But again, Braves showed us something. And we all kind of doubted the Braves because we weren't sure what was going to happen with them.
But Ian Anderson is a true, like, second, number two starter for that team. He showed up.
Ian Anderson showed up, showed out quite well. That whole team showed out quite well in the second game. That score line of 5-0 on 9 hits and the Reds had one error. Just shows you how simple they can win a game. Ian Anderson, 6 innings, pitched 9 strikeouts, 2 walks.
And he's a rookie, too, who just got caught up in the middle of the season, in the middle of this short season, too.
Right. Great. Go have a ball.
Now, I mean, I think we're going to talk more in the division series preview. It's the question of their depth in their rotation now. You know your first two guy, but what's the rest of the guy?
You got to win 3 games now. And do you want to do 2 in a bullpen? I mean, like, is that like an option? But I don't think they're going to play that kind of game. But the Braves are a smart organization. They got a lot of talented players. Like, look up and down their roster. I mean, we all know the top 2 players that are going to come to the plate are just phenomenal. Freddie Freeman, Ronald Acuna Jr.
And even Ozuna, Marcell Ozuna was a bounce back year.
Right. And then to bomb your lineup, you got Dansby Swanson, Nick Markakis. I'm like, you're not missing out a lot on these players.
That's a very scary lineup to face if I were the next team to face them, which I th- we're going to get to it because they have history.
They have very interesting history this year with the next matchup that took place as we move from east to west with the National League.
Now we're in Wrigley with Miami and the Cubs. What a history. And we still remember it. We still have that Miami curse going, which is that they've never lost a playoff series ever in their lifetime, ever. And then the last series that they won in the National League was in Wrigley, actually. And that was 17 years ago. Man, Bartman.
Yeah, that was... And the curse lives on a certain way, in a kind of strange way with that team. But the Marlins, I mean, I know you're a very, very savvy baseball fan. Could you name a lot of players in that team other than like Corey Dickerson?
Yeah, Aguilar, you're talking about Rojas, you know, Chisholm, and then the pitching staff, right? Like you have Alcantara, Lopez, Sixto Sanchez, Alfaro.
Great name, Sixto Sanchez, by the way.
And then it is Sixto. And then you have Lewis Brinson, I mean, and Marte from the trade. So yeah, there's a lot of great talent. Props to Jeter, you know, for breaking that down and making a contender within a few years.
Again, cheap, simple players. Put them all together in the lineup. We're going to play a game. We're going to win. They won that game, game one, on one inning. The seventh inning.
Two home runs from a veteran, too.
Corey Dickerson and Aguilar. Corey Dickerson, I remember from his days in Pittsburgh. He was good.
And he was good in Tampa, too. He hit 30 home runs. We all forget that. He was a 30 home run guy.
Right. Aguilar was a bona fide home run hitter in Milwaukee, moves to a ballpark that's kind of similar in its kind of sense of it. And just again, though, one downside of that series in Chicago, Starling Marte is injured.
Right.
What's going to happen?
Because you have Monte Harrison covering that, which, you know, he's not, you know, Starling Marte is a professional hitter and gives that lineup a quality at bat.
Right. So big hitter. Experienced player, he's not there anymore, at least for the time being. We don't know.
He might play through it. It's only like a fracture of his pinky or something from what I read.
It's going to be taped up so well on that lineup. But the Cubs scored one run against this team. They put their best players out there. They got one run in a home ballpark.
And their pitching, like, you know, were good until that one, like, you know, that two inning, I guess, for the two games now.
Right. The seventh inning killed them both games. Both games. Only the Miami can only score in the seventh inning, by the way. We figured that out. But it was just really smart baseball, it seemed like, from the
Donnie Baseball, you know. He knows what he's doing. Donnie and Jeter, gotta give them credit on how they ran their ballpark in their roster with unbelievable guys like Garrett Cooper, a lot of like 4A guys coming in. I call them a Miami Yankees because a lot of them are former Yankee players in that roster, which is kind of crazy. And the whole staff is former Yankee as well.
It's true. And we'll see how their pitching holds up because, again, they have a deep bullpen. What are they going to do with it? You're right. They have their two starters.
And Pablo Lopez still in the wing. They haven't used him yet. Who was their ace until Alcantara came back.
Right. And then in your bullpen, you got solid pitchers. What's going to happen with that? I mean, like we talked about with the Indians, you look at the other side of the ball field in this game. Cubs are, we know, stacked. I mean, they were destined to win this series, go far in the playoffs, and it just didn't happen.
And the funny part was I wasn't expecting them to go deep because if you look at their regular season stats, all of them had a down year. Their core players, Rizzo, Baez, Bryant, hitting almost in the Mendoza line this season. Schwarber as well. Like none of them were not going to hit. And I knew that they only sneaked into the playoff because everyone else in that division underachieved again.
It's a quick recap of that series, but what's going to happen with the Marlins? The Cubs faltered. You only can play, you only play one seventh inning a game though. So what's going to happen to the Marlins as they go forward?
It'll be interesting if the curse still lives. We'll see, right? We'll find out about that.
Well, now they travel to Texas to play the Braves.
That matchup is juicy because the Braves shelled the crap out of them this season.
Oh, it was bad.
It was bad, but we'll talk more about that. So now moving, do we want to go to LA or San Diego?
LA will be a quick one. We all kind of know what kind of happened. I mean, the first inning of the first game between the Brewers and the Dodgers showed us a lot of issues.
Wait, like what about this team? What about like LA? Why LA is a super, you know, a titan in that thing?
Let's just run the LA line again. It's like, I mean, they have so many good players. You throw out Walker Buehler, who's got like this interesting dynamic injury with his blister finger, the blister on his hand. And like, what's going to happen? Is he going to pitch well? Goes out. Okay.
Look at his ERA in crucial playoff games. If you look at the stats from five games, his ERA is under one.
For a young kid like him, that's incredible.
And, you know, it shows that his College World Series like streak in like Louisville, not a fluke. He's a gamer.
He is a gamer. I mean, that whole lineup is gamers.
And we're talking about underperformance this year from like big guys like Max Muncy and Cody Bellinger. And they're still doing well.
The question still remains though with the Dodgers is the back end of that rotation. The back end of that bullpen. What are they going to do in the 7-8-9? Kenley Jansen has been, what are we going to do? And then, I mean, they went out and got Blake Treinen years ago.
Gratterall is probably the biggest like backup in case Jansen falters. Then you have Gratterall throwing in. And then the biggest enigma, I think, for all this playoff series is Dave Roberts.
Oh, yeah.
You have the talent, but what is Dave Roberts going to do to screw up the next like way to win the World Series?
Right. I mean, if you look up and down their lineup, like I'm just looking at the starting lineup from game one. Mookie Betts, Corey Seager, Justin Turner, Max Muncy, Will Smith, Cordy Bellinger, AJ Pollock. Huh? And then, we'll throw Chris Taylor in the nine slot.
And he's and his batting average in running and scoring position this season is 370.
What?
Scary, crazy lineup. And then, Kershaw coming back to form, Buehler, and then you have Urias, Dustin May, Gonsolin, all these like young slingers coming in. Too stacked.
Right. And then for the Brewers on the other side, like I said, that first inning of that first game, Brent Suter, I heard this stat several times on the Milwaukee Brewers broadcast. Brent Suter threw five walks the entire season.
Yeah.
He threw five walks in an outing of an inning and two thirds. Oh boy. Like, that is not good. The Milwaukee Brewers, who've had so many lineup turnovers in their years of like running around the playoffs.
I mean, the problem with this format, I think the flaw of this format is you can't have a team like the Brewers who had their starting nine had their batting average in the Mendoza line, like, and make the playoff. That is unheard of.
And they didn't get a lot of run production. They have a good lineup. Okay, never didn't doubt their lineup. But again, as a former Mariner fan, I just love looking at this lineup and see how many former Mariners are on this team.
Ben Gamble.
Narvaez, Vogelbach. I believe even Healy was on the Mariners at one point.
Yeah, Healy was on the Mariners.
Like, haven't you learned? The Mariners are not a good source of... they're great when they leave the stadium. They're good. They're very good. I have a soft spot for the Brewers. I love listening to the Brewers broadcast with Bob Uecker on the call and Brian Anderson on the TV side. And they're a great team to watch. They're fun. They're dynamic. They got great players. Brent Woodruff pitched great. Josh Hader is a phenomenal pitcher.
And they were missing Devin Williams, their bona fide rookie. Devin Williams needed him, but lost him to injury. So, and then Corbin Burns was the other emerging ace,
right?
Who was also not available.
Right. Now we have to look at, look at that Dodgers roster and just like, how do they lose games? Like, how do they lose games? Like, off the bench, we're going to pull in Jock Peterson and Kike Hernandez, which can be starters on any other team. It's comparing the two teams. It's Brewers had a shot. They won it. They got in the last couple of days of the season. you're going up against Walker Buehler, game one. Clayton Kershaw, game two. And you're out.
Like everyone else says, good knowing you, boys.
and you're out. And then you go to the final team that made it in. Exciting series, I will say, between the Cardinals and the Padres.
Honestly, I did not expect the game one to come from the Cardinals, but what, I mean, before we go into the series, I got to give props to the Cardinals still. They went through COVID and did not play for 3 weeks and crammed in 55 games within 45 days. So props to them to getting into the playoffs with that.
Right. And another team that had the Marlins also had a health issue, had health issues with their team, and they somehow managed to get in the playoffs too. So the two major teams that had outbreaks this year made it to the playoffs, playing numerous doubleheaders, the Cardinals being the worst of the two. But
COVID power. I'm kidding.
right. But I mean, I haven't watched a lot of the Cardinals in years past. I know about most of their players. Watching these games with them, I mean, good job. Like, put out a tough lineup. They were never really out of any of the games.
Well, they're very nitty gritty. Like, that's the Cardinal way, though. Like, they're not that interesting. They want to hit home runs. Besides Paul Goldschmidt, what makes them so great is they're so gritty. Like, all of them are contact guys. We're talking about Tommy Edman, Colton Wong. Just guys who will just like make contact. Like, it's annoying to most teams.
And arguably the best single leader on their team is Yadier Molina.
Right.
I mean, the guy gets up the plate. When you need something, he knows what to do. When he's behind the plate, every pitcher looks down at him and like, okay, I'm in good hands. I think that says so much about that organization. Because like you said, they had to go through the gauntlet. And they had players in that locker room and a coach that could say, okay, we can do this. It's going to be terribly difficult. We can put this through. And they managed. And they really came through with some epic games. The first game, they won. Second game, wow.
I mean, props to San Diego. The Slam Diego came back after being cold in the last half of the regular season.
Oh, yeah. I watched a few games of the Padres this year. The Padres played the Mariners one game. If you remember, there was a doubleheader in the first game in the seventh inning. The Mariners blew it, and it's because the Padres just slammed them out. I mean, they hit home run after home run. Machado was just yard. I mean, how is this? What? Like, this team's not supposed to be that right. Good. And they were incredible. And because they pieced a bunch of simple pieces together, a couple big names, a couple young stars. I'm like, okay, we're going to do this. And they did it.
They're stacked. Like, you know, you got Trent Grisham coming over the whole traumatic wild card experience from last year coming through. Jake Cronenworth from that race trade now solidifies the middle of the infield. And he's a two-way guy. He could pitch too if you really want him to pitch, but he's just a hitter. And then you have a resurgence, veteran resurgence from Hosmer and Machado and Fernando Tatis. You know, if you just looked at his first half number alone, MVP candidate for them.
Right. And then you have the player who's been there, it seems like the longest, is Will Myers.
And he's resurgence too. He has resurging gear.
Right. So, I mean, that team as well. And they have Tommy Pham, who's, again, an experienced player, plays well, had some difficulties with outfield on game three. Just like that I was watching the game and it looked like it was just, left field was just a trouble spot for the whole game for everybody. Their pitching staff is, I don't know, because they lost some players this year before they got into the playoffs. They went deep into their bullpen for several games.
Especially the do or die game for them, game two, game three. Like, I think Padres going forward, like, they won it. They threw everything in the kitchen sink, but now your bullpen's very much banged up because they have to pitch in both long games. And you don't have your key starters in Lamet and Clevinger. So you only have Paddock and Davies again. Like, what are you going to do?
Right. And they burned Rosenthal multiple games. Like, I mean, you think Pomerantz could come out and start a game? Really had to?
Maybe, but he is a bullpen arm for a reason, right? He is. And then Pagan is burnt out. And then you have Stammen pitched opener, probably burnt out at this point. Their bullpen essentially covered more than half the game of this past series.
And that leads us to the next round where we start off this podcast talking about it. Divisional matchup.
And it is a true division series.
Right. It's a true four-way division series. However, we've evaluated who made it through. And we have very overtly mentioned no NL Central teams, 0-4 yes. in the National League.
The record of 2-14. What a sad streak.
AL, you lost 3 teams. Gone. The only non-Central division team of any league that did not make it was the Blue Jays. Wow.
I mean, do we want to question the legitimacy of that Central division? Like, they all got killed by the Coast. Like, especially the National League, except for the Cardinals, they did not win a single game. They got destroyed.
I don't know. They argue the most competitive division, which I will say that. The Central is usually the most competitive. The National League Central, historically, very competitive. American League Central's heads up and down. I think they get more competitive now with Chicago being good. So that's another thing. But I think the most disappointing is Cleveland and Chicago. Cleveland and Chicago should have really done better.
Right. Especially Cleveland with that pitching staff.
Cleveland should at least won a game. Not win a game. Chicago, I think, could have won. I think they, like I said, they kind of burned their own. They burned themselves in that
game. They buried themselves in a tombstone.
Right. The NL. I'm not sure I would have picked the Brewers to beat the Dodgers.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're pretty weak if you look at the actual compared to other teams. Like Brewers should have never made that playoff. Never should have made it.
I think the Cardinals against the Padres could have gone either way after game one. Game two got dicey. The Reds, really disappointing, unfortunately. Great team, just lack of balance.
And Cubs are notorious chokers, so.
The Cubs, we can razz on the Marlins all we want. The Cubs should beat the Marlins. We should beat the Marlins. But like you said, true division series. Atlanta will play Florida. LA is playing San Diego. New York is playing Tampa. Houston is playing Oakland.
Which one do we want to go into first? Should we dive into our interesting favorite matchup or the? I mean, they're all interesting in a way.
Well, they're all interesting, but let's look at the. I guess we'll talk. We'll talk about the environment for each one because this is we have entered the bubble now. We have entered the bubble. I think let's. Let's start the National League. I think the National League poses an interesting dynamic with the two teams where they're playing. The first, obviously, is Miami is playing Atlanta. Oh no, if you're a Miami Marlins fan. Just how do you prepare yourself for what you're about to see?
And if you look at the last series before they went to the final series of the regular season, the Braves collectively in that 4 games scored over 30 runs against the Marlins.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just yet to kind of question what you're about to see.
And they're in Texas, right?
Right.
So that should slightly help them because it's a pitcher ballpark.
They are playing in Houston.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
They're playing Minute Maid Park, which has its goods and bad. I mean, so if you look at that, so Dome Stadium for both the games in Texas, for both series in Texas, Houston's ballpark has that kind of shortish portion right. Where they have that high wall train track area.
The Craig Crawford box, yeah.
And then left. Will that benefit either team? I don't know. But what will benefit them is that weird center field. That weird center field is a hazard. When they removed the mound.
I mean, it used to be a hazard when they had the hill in center field.
Now the hill's gone. but that's still a deep part of the ballpark. And when you have batters on both teams that can just pump it, Aguilar, Freeman, Ozuna, Brian Anderson, Corey Dickerson, you have players that are spraying the ball across the field.
And running too. They're all going to run. They're both running.
The Marlins are stolen base. They steal bases everywhere. So what's going to happen here? But roster-wise, we know the depth of the Braves on that team. The pitching is a question.
Right.
The Marlins have a little bit of a sure stance on the pitching. But their roster is very young.
A little bit of playoff
experience.
Yeah.
And you're
yeah.
missing on Starling Marte. Or he's the unknown of Starling Marte. How's that going to play out in that series? That's my question. Minute Maid Park, though, is an interesting dynamic to play in for those two teams. Because if you look at their two stadiums they play in, Atlanta plays in a ballpark that's wide open.
Right.
That is right. Wide open field. Marlins Park is kind of an interesting dynamic.
It's a dome. Yeah, it's like a roundish stadium. Yeah.
So it kind of resembles the style of a Minute Maid Park. But Minute Maid Park, as we saw, has seen in last year's playoffs and in games throughout many seasons, is kind of a, unless you play there often, you're going to have to learn the kind of the ifs, because that right field is just a strange shape. And then you have the
right, it's curved and it could become a home run, like the, you know, the Howie Kendrick home run, like a random fly ball could just hit the pole.
Right. And then you got that, the Crawford box in left field. So we'll see. Interesting series. Like you said, the Braves crushed the Marlins throughout this year.
Right. And that's coming from a Marlins pitching staff that now were dominant for most of the season. I mean, I think one thing the Marlins might have advantages was Sandy Alcantara coming back for once and actually pitching. That's their number one guy. And then if Pablo Lopez has his cutter working again.
That's the truth. Will the team show out like they've shown out?
Right, exactly.
That's honestly
exactly.
What's going to happen.
And then the big question for the Braves is, who's their number three starter? Is it Bryce Wilson? Or are they going to bring up other like farmhand? Or are they going to play an opener?
Right, because their bullpen's good. They did not really burn the bullpen a lot. Game one, they kind of did 13 innings. I don't know.
That's their strength, though. Like, they have Will Smith.
I was looking at the Marlins season stats the other night, and it was just like, how does this team make the playoffs?
Well, their hitting's not that strong. It's a very streaky team.
So the question is, this playoffs are built on streaks. Can that hold over?
Right. Can it hold over?
They had 51 stolen bases. They were second in the National League, second in the majors in stolen bases behind the Padres in stolen bases. Yikes. Like, that is a stat.
So for the Braves, they just can't get those guys on base and let them steal bases and get intimidated by like base runners and like lose their cool.
Team OPS during regular season is 703, which was 23rd in the majors. I mean, versus the Braves, which were one.
Right. And that's coming from two main contributor MVPs of this season.
I mean, the Braves are just an the Braves led the league in RBIs. The Marlins were 21st.
Yep, I mean, bottom.
Yeah. So you have two very different, statistically different teams. But in a perverse way, as much as, you know, I love analytics, analytics kind of get miffed here. You look at the environment and the circumstances and how they're going to impact your decisions using analytics to make forward. And the Marlins surprised us all by beating the Cubs. Can they do that again?
Right. I think there's a saying about how you got to throw analytics out of the window with playoffs. It's such a short sample size and a crapshoot that you got to just play the hottest hand and go with the gut to see like who's actually good. Like, sure, like let's say you throw Sixto Sanchez and Freddie Freeman might be hitting 500. Like, if he's doing well, like, are you going to still keep him there? Of course you will, because he's going to try to find a way to get him out.
Marlins are not a team that's statistically great, but
they have the heart now with Rojas carrying it.
Now they have, we won a series. We weren't supposed to win a series. We won a series. Cool. And that's like I said, Houston is an interesting ballpark for both of these teams. Will anyone benefit from that environment?
I think I'm picking the Marlins for that series. I don't know. You got to believe in it. Believe in the Marlins curse.
I don't think it will be a short series, though. I think it will go
game five, probably.
Yeah, I think it will go 4 or 5.
Yeah.
It'll be a straight win. I'm sticking with the Braves. I think the Braves will do it in 4.
I'll say Miami in 5.
So I think the Braves will do it in 4. I think the question is, though, is that third game. What's going to happen in that third game for both teams?
Right. Who they're throwing out. So I guess we can move across town to Texas.
Yeah, up I-35 to Arlington in the brand new Globe Life Park next to, Globe Life? We had Globe Life Stadium, and then we have Globe Life Park. And when I lived in Dallas, it was a different name.
It's like Arlington or something, right?
Right. It was just, that stadium was a rain hazard. And that stadium was hot, and it rained it ugly. It was not a fun stadium to be at in the summertime. I put a dome on it. They literally took the parking lot across the street, demolished it, put a new stadium up, and it's a beautiful stadium. They're going to play the World Series there too. And walks in the Dodgers versus the Padres. Clayton Kershaw gets his unwelcome homecoming. Two teams that have played each other a lot this year.
And Dodgers has the winning record against the Padres. They got to keep that big brother complex together.
Right. And both these teams are coming from not great hitters ballparks into a dome. So the weather is gone with an influence.
Yeah.
Right. So now you got what will happen with these two teams. And I think the issue lies in the Padres rotation. Because both teams got stacked rosters, a lot of talent up and down the lineup. Bullpens, good. We know who's going to pitch for the Dodgers. Pretty much.
Right.
The Dodgers, end of the bullpen, got a problem. What's going to happen in the ninth inning? But that's it.
Right.
Who's going to start the game for the Padres?
And their bullpen's burnt out, too, from the whole Cardinal series.
So that's the question. It's like, what's going to happen with these two teams? I don't know. The question is the Padres' youth and exuberance and style too much, could be too much for the Dodgers over a 5-game series? Because the pitching is a question, but can the lineup itself outpace a rock star lineup of the Dodgers?
And then I think if it was last year, yeah, Padres could have beaten the Dodgers, but this year they got the golden kid in Mookie Betts. He is a game changer of that roster. Having him in a leadoff spot changes everything.
Yeah, it's hard. As much as I would love to want the Padres to win that series,
I think based on the advantages Dodgers, like Mookie Betts is on right now too.
I'm almost thinking the Dodgers sweep, because that game three is going to be too close. Too many questions for me to pick the Padres out of one of those three. The Padres could win like a game two. So maybe 4 games, but Dodgers in 3 or 4.
But we're talking about a shaky Chris Paddock this season, who's been hittable. And then Zach Davies, who's overused now because he's having way too many short rests now. And he's been the solid pitcher of that whole rotation. And now you have to depend on him.
And Zach Davies' playoff experience comes from being on the Brewers.
Right.
Which was a staff. I mean, they were good. They were deep. They could go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Can we do that right now? Jake Cronenworth, is he going to keep playing hot? Fernando Tatis, he can keep playing hot. Manny Machado.
Eric Hosmer, is he going to be clutch as he was in Kansas City?
Right. So that's your questions. I mean, kudos to the Padres. They're the most exciting team in baseball.
They brought baseball back to life for sure. I just don't know if they'll make it past that stacked Dodgers lineup. I mean, they could be like the national situation like last year, but I just don't see it because the Nationals at least had strong pitching coming in, and pitching is still key in this
playoff. A little too afraid for the Padres. So I like the Dodgers in that series, 3 or 4 games. Either a sweeper, they get the Padres get one early.
I still say the Dodgers. They have the staff, and they have a mission this year to win that title for once.
I agree.
Once and for all, finally, to make that curse go away for them and to Kershaw to finally get his ring.
Right. And then if they win, they stay in the same ballpark for the World Series. I mean, for the championship series, they get fans, think about 11,000, and it's basically Clayton Kershaw's homecoming.
Right. And hopefully Kershaw doesn't come to his pressure, like playoff Kershaw. You want the regular Kershaw to be there.
You want regular season Kershaw in these games. I mean, Walker Buehler, please stay healthy. I hope the blister does not come back.
Right.
Because if he is on fire, oh boy.
Right. And then you have the emerging Dustin May, Tony Gonsolin, and Julio Ruiz, who could go pretty deep into games. And then you have that bullpen, which has been number one in ERA this season, just because of emerging Jack McGee and comeback player Blake Treinen and a 100-mile demon and Gustav Graterol. Like,
and to crazy. Think this how this season started for the Dodgers. First game of the season, Clayton Kershaw is supposed to start, and he doesn't.
Right.
And oh no, what's going to happen? Dustin May rolls in, rookie, and the world kind of realizes, oh my gosh, this team is legit. They have a shot to really do damage. Oh yeah, and we have Mookie Betts.
Mookie. He brought in at least 10 wins in that team.
Oh, absolutely.
It was his defense and his like hitting, and he could run too.
Right. And the other thing is, the other part of this team is they traded for another outfielder a couple of seasons ago, the AJ Pollock.
Right.
Great solid outfielder. So,
and he's coming back this year.
Right. So now we have a full team. We've gone through the Dodgers line. We praised them enough.
Don't choke again.
please go far. And then we'll see who you play in the next round.
So that's the National League. Now moving to California, sunny California. Let's start with Slam Diego's home ballpark, Petco Park, wherever the conventioners come out of.
So now we have the Rays against the Yankees at Petco Park in San Diego, where they recorded the highest temperature of the year last night at like 91 degrees. So now we have weather. It's not like rain. We have heat.
Right. Dry heat. Desert heat.
It was over 100 in LA. We'll get the LA series, the series in Los Angeles, the Dodger Stadium. But San Diego, of all the four stadiums left, is the least hitter-friendly ballpark. And you have two teams coming in who have very hitter-friendly ballparks. You got the Trop, which is just poke the ball and it's a home run. Great stadium for a home run hitter. And Yankee Stadium with the short porch, and then the center field, which is like just hit it, and it's gonna, if you can travel, it will travel. So I really do think the ballparks have an influence in this game. However, the two teams that are playing have gone something crazy against each other this year. I mean, we had games with like 18 runs. I mean,
right.
I was like, what's going to happen now? So I don't know. This is the most unpredictable series, I think, for both the teams and the place and the environment in which they're playing.
And like how far they could travel. I mean, one part is if we get the wild card, you know, Yankees to be hitting, then especially Giancarlo to start hitting, then that's a different story. There's going to be home runs left and right. They could mash dingers far and far away.
Just be careful of the warehouse. Do not damage the warehouse. That's a beautiful thing in San Diego. Do not damage the warehouse.
I mean, in the hotel is right there too.
Oh, that hotel, the condo building. It's a great setup. I love that ballpark. I'd love to go see it. but just don't be nice. Garrett Cole's predicted to start game one. I mean, you got the game. They have the game. But no one should count out the absolute craziness that was the Rays this season.
I was not shocked, but a lot of people were shocked that they, you know, became a first place division winner. It's unexpected, I guess, for most people's eye, because there's so many unknown names in that roster who could contribute and who expected to do it. And they play matchup. They could throw eight left-handed hitters in a lineup against a right-handed starting pitcher.
Right.
And then they could like always pinch hit for someone else whenever they want.
Right. So that's going to be how this all rolls out. I think this is going five, no matter what.
I think the key is going to come down to starting pitching. Like, who's going to hold up? Like, we know Garrett Cole and his stuff, but the rest of the Yankee rotation, like, is Tanaka going to go back being playoff Tanaka? And he does not have a good record against Tampa Bay. He gets shelled quite a bit. His ERA is in the 7 against Tampa Bay. And then who's your third pitcher now that you don't have James Paxton or Severino? Is it J.A. Happ or is it Davey Garcia, the rookie? Who are we counting on?
Right. That's the question. Again, this is the same problem we have with a little bit of a different spin, but the same kind of questions we have with the Braves. Braves have two solid starters. Who's number three? And we differed on that series. So I think that's going to be your next question with is who's going to put together games. I think in five, I got the Rays in five. Sorry. I got the Rays in five. I think multiple games will go to extra innings. Multiple games. I think at least one game, at least two games will go to extra innings. But I also think one game is going to be a complete utter blowout. Like 14-2 kind of blowout. Like, because that's what the Rays have done this year. The Yankees won that too. The Yankees were beating the Blue Jays like 18-3 this year.
Right.
So when they're on, like you said, they're on. They're going to mash balls.
That's the wild card right now, is if the Yankees could mash balls or not. And if they can't, then I think it's going to the Rays because of their pitching staff and that lights out bullpen. Like who can they really hit? I mean, if they really want a tight situation, you'll bet that Nick Anderson's going to come out and beat the crap out of that Yankee lineup.
Right.
And that's coming from a Yankee fan. Like I love the Yankees, but Nick Anderson has been just too good this year.
That bullpen of the Rays is too strong to ignore. Without question. That's kind of what we have to deal with.
You said Rays. I say Rays also in five, unfortunately. That's their top pick. So now moving on to
the wonderful Dodger Stadium. A stadium that has just ill notes for both of these teams. The Astros won their controversial World Series there years ago. And then the Athletics have the hanging nature of what happened, and they went there in a playoff series years ago with a Kirk Gibson home run. So historically, this stadium has like ill nature to both of these teams of just like either win or lose. But also, these two teams hated each other this season.
We had
a brawl between a coach and a player, between the
hitting coach Cintrón and Ramon Laureano, the center fielder of the A's.
Just generally uncomfortable. So think about that. But if you look at the lineups, you got one team who's surging and one team who's just kind of humming along, not doing so great. Astros just humming with mediocrity this year. A's won the division.
But they also have coming in with a question mark with their pitching. So that's also the trade-off, like the Marlins in the Braves series. One has good hitting, one has better pitching.
And can those combination of bats from the A's outplay the combination of bats on the Astros? Because the Astros, when they're on, you are in trouble. I mean, when you go from Bregman, Altuve, Correa, like Springer, cool. Got those four. Add in Michael Brantley.
And Kyle Tucker,
even Josh Reddick. I mean, you got players that have just been there and they've done that. Those are all those players we just named were all on a World Series roster.
And they were playing last year until game 7.
Right. So they know what to deal with. However, the Astros are missing one key piece, at least more than one key piece. No Justin Verlander. Hope he comes back healthy after a serious surgery. They also lost several. They lost another couple of pitchers.
Ozuna's gone. No closer. So they have to use Presley now.
That's a trouble. That's not great.
Last year, they had Gerrit Cole. No Gerrit Cole for them. Just
so then, both teams have question marks on pitching. Granted, the A's have a little more standardized with their pitching. It seems like they've had like consistent pitchers this year, but
we got to bring up one pitcher. That's a controversy.
Well, Mike Fiers. What will happen with good old Mike Fiers?
How the Astros will avenge Mike Fiers for being a snitch.
Oh, yeah. I think Mike Fiers is told the truth, and he told the truth when he should have told the truth.
Which I'm glad, because now we know Astros' arrogant attitude has been pissing everyone off, and now we have a reason to get pissed off for.
So the question now is, what's going to happen? When you put that roster up against each other, what is going to happen? Because we know starting pitchers for that team. We know who starting pitchers are for the Oakland Athletics. Mike Fiers is one of them. If this series goes beyond two games, he should pitch. He's probably going to pitch. So that third game, which he obviously has to go to, will he go on the mound?
And will he be able to face his former teammates?
I mean, also kudos to behind the plate, because you have to settle him down to pitch that game.
And then the A's catching, that's a young catcher too. I believe it's Sean Murphy.
Sean Murphy turns 26 this month. He is a young guy. He is not part of this drama. What's going to happen? But then you also have to look at the rest of this team. Can they support him? I mean, kudos to the Athletics, by the way. They pick up randomly Jake Lamb throughout the season this year.
Right, just to be an insurance for Matt Chapman.
Right. So up and down this roster, they have experience. Olsen, LaStella, Lamb, Pinder, Simeon, Robbie Grossman. This team has players that can hopefully help out Mike Fiers if it gets to a literal just terrible situation that game.
And then
really hope it doesn't.
And then that bullpen's really has that biggest experience. Liam Hendricks, we're talking about Soria, right. Petit. Just good amount. And even Diekman.
Right. And then you got Mike Minor, who can kind of flip between the two. What's going to happen with him? But this team, I think, has the right support network to ignore the obvious when it comes to the Mike Fiers, even the brawl earlier this year, because that was just ugly.
Right. Very, very ugly.
To have a brawl between a coach and a player in a game. So I think the Oakland Athletics have the better team environment to support, to go through that and to go through that setup. However, do the Astros have that anger, that type of ferocity to say, we're going to walk into this stadium where we won a World Series, we're going to beat you? It's either 3 games, 4 games, or 5 games. We're going to walk out here winners and go and bust down to San Diego to play the next game. The Astros also have that mentality, because the Astros have gone through game sevens in multiple playoff series in the past. And it's the same roster. This roster has not changed a lot.
It hasn't. I think you bring up a good point. Was the key to this playoff, this past wild card, it shows that inexperience is a huge weakness and disadvantage to the playoff team.
And the most continuous team these are probably two of the most continuous teams of any of the 8 teams left, but the Astros have nearly the same lineup they did before. However, right. Cannot ignore the fact there is no Gerrit Cole, like you said. There is no Justin Verlander. There is no Ozuna. This team is lacking players last year. Ozuna was a problem last year to begin with.
Well, because the domestic violence, right?
Which was, I mean, to have that as a front and center when it should have been. Absolutely. Like, this man committed a crime. He was suspended for it. And then you went out and you purposely signed him.
Right.
That is not a baseball matter. It became a baseball matter.
And then what's funny was now the Astros teams look like a hypocrite. Teammates look like a hypocrite because they were denouncing a guy in the farm system who committed the same thing.
And they go out and sign him. Well, he's the best player available. I don't care if he's the best player available. Make a good character decision. And they didn't. And they went to the World Series because of it. And you're like, oh gosh, like, do I have to do that? And then we have the Mike Fire situation. It's the same thing. Why the Astros have invited all of this criticism on themselves? They are baseball issues. One of them is a clear baseball issue. One of them is not. But it became a baseball issue when you, like you said, one thing about one thing organization. This is another thing organization. And then Mike Fiers said one thing organization. And then you see the drop in stats this year, and you're like, well, are they associated with what happened? And another factor in this series is Dusty Baker.
Older man Dusty.
Dusty Baker has been there, done that. But then again, so has Bob Melvin.
And they're both known to not have gotten a ring ever.
Right. Strong managers, top class organizations when they run them the way they should. But yikes, if they've invited scenarios into them that neither of them were technically part of. Dusty Baker was not the manager when all this happened.
Right. And he just came into it as a cleanup, just for an interim.
Right. And so we'll see what happens there.
And Dusty is also not known to be a great playoff manager either. He chokes quite a bit.
Right. So we've discussed the despicable nature of the Astros and how it invited itself into this series multiple ways. You have last season and the seasons prior, you have the Osuna issue. He's no longer the team, thankfully. But you had to invite that issue into your clubhouse. Then you won the World Series. But there was an issue with that. The player that outed you is on the other bench in a playoff series now. And lastly, you played this team this year and your coach, a coaching staff member, fought a player on the other team.
Technically, he ran away once the player started charging him. And it made his player sacrifice in front of him, which is a coward move.
Right. It was just a despicable look for this team. And I cannot, morally, I will not pick the Astros in this series. Morally, I will not. For many reasons. I think the A's take it in four, or they'll sweep them, and they'll sweep them good.
They should make a statement to this team for once and for all.
And just say, we are an organization that has played well. We've done everything correctly. We hold ourselves to a certain standard. You guys have not. We have the player on our team. We believe in him. We're going to come and we're going to play you, play ball, play fair, and we're going to walk out Dodger Stadium, head down to San Diego, and play the winner of the Rays-Yankee series.
Yep. And I think their anger is also, they could have won the division the past few seasons if the Astros didn't then cheat.
Right. And the A's are built for a strange environment. They're built for flexibility.
Right.
And that's what the season's all about. So we predicted that, we crossed up on the Braves-Marlins series, but we think the AL is going to be Oakland versus Tampa. Talk about a media market frenzy in that series. Woo!
Which is good for baseball. You're promoting the small market team. Finally, you have to.
Right. And then in National League, we predict a split between the Braves and the Marlins, but the Dodgers to win out there. But there is a possibility now of the All-Florida World Series.
Right.
Texas. But there's also a strong possibility of an All-California World Series, or we revisit the two most historic teams in the league. You get Yankees on one side, Dodgers on the other.
And they're both designed similarly as a team as well.
I think the worst thing for a baseball fan, the best thing for the commentary around it, you got Dodgers, Astros.
The rematch of the 2017 series. My God.
if we thought this was a flamethrower matchup in terms of what's going to be around surrounding it, that one's worse.
Well, we're not hoping for that matchup to ever happen.
No.
That makes it look bad on the commissioner office, to be fair, if the Astros make it.
Right. I really hope, as a mostly as a fan of the sport and a fan of decency, the Astros do not win.
I hope they get eliminated this upcoming week.
Right. So now we sit where we do. We have predicted it. We're in a bubble environment in four stadiums where none of these teams have call home. Dodger Stadium is a non-hitter's ballpark. You got three non-hitter's ballparks, one iffy. They put the challenges in front of them. Question is going to pull through.
Right. And then I guess the key also comes through is, will playoff experience help them move on to the next level? Or will hot streaks and anger and emotions drive them to the next level? That's the big two questions we're looking at. That's it for this episode of Sayonara Baseball. Sayonara Baseball is hosted and produced by me, Kazuki Kiba, and Tara Hori. Guest starring Brandon Beiser from Forbes Advisor and the Airline Guy blog. Please check out his LinkedIn profile if you're looking for business intelligence help, as well as any advice on finance and air travel tips. This episode was edited by Kazuki Kiba, with additional research and editing by Maria Tierney. Our theme song is by Key Margus. Ray Laptop mixed this episode. Sayonara Baseball is a production of Daylight and Media 3 Limited. We'll be back with another episode. If you like this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast so more people will know about this show. Go to daylightinteractive.com to see some exclusive updates and more about our upcoming shows. I'm Kazuki Kiba.
I'm Hara Hori.
And this has been Sayonara Baseball.